This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. Actor Jack Black doesn't just play guys who preach the gospel of rock and roll in movies. He's spent a good part of his life worshiping at the altar himself. Black is the star of the new film School of Rock, about a would-be rock god who takes on the job of substitute teacher in a Tony prep school under false pretenses and ends up forming his class of fifth graders into a band. It's a role tailor-made for Black, who has a cult following as one half of the mock metal rock band Tenacious D, and is best known for his scene-stealing performance as a rock snob record store clerk in the film High Fidelity. His other movies include Shallow Hal, Orange County, and Saving Silverman. In Sunday's New York Times Magazine, Josh Rottenberg wrote, "With a special talent for mad flashing stares, blistering riffs of profanity, and scatological schlubbiness, Black has for years been the go-to guy for anyone casting the role of an unhinged coworker or a bong-toting roommate." Here's a scene from School of Rock. Black is revealing to his class their new revised schedule.
8:15 to 10, rock history. 10 to 11, rock appreciation and theory. And then band practice till the end of the day.
What about math?
No, not important.
Well, a lot of the film is you being intense about how great rock and roll is. And I loved so many of those lines, especially things like, "Now we lift a goblet to rock."
The goblet to rock, yes.
And I wondered if you, did you ad-lib that stuff? I would think you'd have it all down from your years preaching the gospel of rock in your band, Tenacious D.
Yeah, well, it is my specialty. And there was some ad-libbing when it came to the jamming scenes where I'm actually, like, you know, working with the kids on certain moves and stuff. Richard Linklater, the director, likes to do a lot of rehearsals and improvisation, and a lot of stuff came out of that. But for the most part, you know, when stuff seems like improv, it's just because Mike knows my voice and writes really well for me, and it seems like it. But the Goblet of Rock was mine. I'll take.
Now, in the film, you see these kids. They're 10 years old. This class, substitute teaching. You see these kids in their music class playing orchestral instruments, and they're really talented. And you decide for your own reasons to redirect their talent to rock. Now, were the actors themselves, the children, classically trained musicians?
Yes, especially the kid who plays Lawrence. His name's Robert Tsai. He actually had played some big concerts in front of a lot of people. He's 10 years old. That was important to Linklater, that he get these great musician kids, because there's nothing worse than going to a movie where people are playing instruments and then they're not really playing them and you can tell.
Right, the equivalent of lip syncing on their instrument.
I mean, exactly. Having said that, I don't actually play all of my guitar solos. I can't believe I've worked my way into my own trap. But
I was just going to ask you. So why not?
No, I'm not that good on guitar. I'm the least talented of the entire cast on their instruments. I play power chords in my band. And also, I've never played electric guitar. I'm always acoustic power chord guy, and I leave all the solos up to Kyle. So then, you know, there's these face-melting solos that I'm supposed to play, and if you watch the film closely, you'll see I disguise my hands really, really well. Uh-huh. I'm constantly moving and swirling. And if, you know, we're going to perform the song on some talk shows, and I'm a little concerned, because when it gets to my guitar solo in the song, mm-hmm. My plan is to do a ventrilo solo, and it's something I invented, where basically I do the solo, I sing the solo, but I don't move my lips, and I keep my fingers moving. I'll give you a taste of it. Now, I need to, my throat's a little hoarse right now.
And hard on the radio, to pull this off.
Well, you can't see the incredibleness of my non-moving lips.
Exactly. How much air guitar did you play in school, in front of a mirror?
Plenty. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember when I first heard Eruption, the Eddie Van Halen guitar solo on Van Halen 1. Huh. I remember feeling like it almost made me cry. I thought it was so beautiful and hard rocking at the same time. And I felt at the time, no one, including Eddie Van Halen, appreciates this song as much as I do. And later on, I found out that everyone kind of feels that way about certain music.
Maybe not that Eddie Van Halen.
Maybe not.
Solo.
Maybe I really... Oh, come on. No, don't underestimate Eruption. That has touched many lives. And I love... You know, I have an appreciation for all kinds of music, but, you know, the metal, the heavy metal is definitely my roots.
Was that one of the first albums you got?
No. The first album I bought, the first heavy metal album I bought was Ozzy Osbourne, Blizzard of Oz.
Okay. And did that change your life?
It did indeed, because before that it was all Styx and Journey. And I don't even know what category of rock that is. It's not really prog rock. It's not progressive so much as, what is that? What do you call Styx or
whoa.
Journey?
Whoa, bad.
No!
Overblown? Overblown? We're getting suggestions from the crowd
it's
here?
It's very... No,
bombastic?
Those aren't subcategories of rock. I call it like... they just had great drama. What was that song? Welcome to the Grand Illusion. Come on in and see what's happening. But there was no evil, and that's what metal brought into my life, was the love of evil rock.
When you were in your teens, it sounds like 13, 14, 15, you were having a kind of rough time of it, and you ended up in a small school for problem teenagers. I don't know if it was a reform school or what. How did you get sent there?
It was a good school. I didn't get sent there. My parents took me out of the... school I was in. I was at Culver Junior High, and it wasn't the school's problem really, but I'd gotten into doing some drugs, and I stole some money from my mom, and it was just bad time. And
what's this, like eighth grade or
ninth grade?
Yeah, that's young. Mm.
Yeah, it was too young. And then I went to Poseidon School that only had about 20 kids in the whole school. And there was a psychologist on campus who was also like a bodybuilder. He was really big and muscly, so that if you tried to hit him or something, he would wrestle you down and then give you therapy. But anyway, it wasn't, you didn't have to go to the psychologist. You know, you could, it was voluntary, but I saw other kids going there and talking to him, and I was curious about it, and I said, hey, I want to come in and talk to you. And he said, sure. And I came in, and I told him, I just started to spill my guts about what, you know, the things I was feeling guilty about. And I just started bawling. I was bawling so hard. It felt so good, though, at the same time. And, that kind of turned things around a little bit. It was kind of like many years of confession built up and then released at one time, and all these secrets I was holding.
Now, tell me, how did you do in school?
I was not a very good student, to tell you the truth. I didn't have good study habits. I was a little distracted, and I would always fall asleep in class, and as soon as class was over, I would be filled with energy and go running out of the classroom. So I know it wasn't that I was tired, just that it had a... What do you call that? It doesn't matter. All I'm saying is it put me to sleep. Until I had a really good teacher in ninth grade, an acting teacher. But to tell you the truth, that didn't seem like it counts, because it really didn't feel like school at all. It felt like something so fun, and I knew I wanted to do it.
You had some parts as a kid. right?
I did.
What was your first role? Was it in a commercial?
Yeah. Well, my first role, I was the wizard in The Wizard of Oz in the Idlewild summer camp. And that was not a good part, even though it is the title role of the piece. You don't really see the wizard until the very end when he's uncovered behind the curtain. But that gave me a little taste. And I wanted to do it. I loved the attention and the magic of theater. And I talked my stepfather into taking me out to auditions when I was 13. I had this idea that if my friend saw me on television, that I would automatically become more popular. And then I got that commercial, and it worked. I was more popular.
But then it only
lasted a few days.
So were you a popular, not so popular kid? And
you know, it wasn't that I was unpopular, but I think I definitely needed a little more attention than most kids. I wanted there was something weird. There was a weird emptiness in me that needed to be filled.
I want to talk about High Fidelity. You played Barry, and he is just a hilarious, belligerent, kind of know-it-all music fanatic record clerk. Now, you almost didn't take this part of Barry in High Fidelity, and I can't really imagine the film without you. What happened there?
Well, I thought it was too mean. I almost don't take every part I've ever taken. I get scared and a fear of failure. But.
Why would you worry about the part being too mean?
I don't know. A lot of actors approach, you know, what they're going to do next in terms of how much of a stretch is the role for them. Like, this part, this is exciting for me because it's going to be a totally, you know, different person from me. I look for parts that are closer to me, that explore, you know, sides of me that I understand already. You know what I mean? So, even though, in retrospect, this part was almost made for me, it seemed too mean at the time. It didn't seem like it wasn't a perfect fit, so I thought it was totally wrong.
Well, let's play this clip from High Fidelity. This is the scene, Jack, in which Barry refuses to sell "I Just Called to Say I Love You" to this middle-aged guy who wants to buy it for his daughter. And then Barry gets in an argument with the owner of the record store, Rob, played by John Cusack. Do you want to say anything about this scene before we play it?
Well, I'd just like to say this is one of the hardest scenes because I don't feel that judgmental. I feel like I'm a pretty forgiving, and and also I would never give someone a guilt trip over buying Stevie Wonder, even if it is his cheesiest song. He's earned a pass because of all the unbelievably great songs he's written, like the one that plays at the end credits. But anyway, here's the scene.
I'm looking for a record for my daughter for her birthday. I just called to say I love you. You have it?
Yeah.
Great.
We have it.
Great.
Can I have it then?
No. No, you can't.
Why not?
Well, it's sentimental, tacky crap. That's why not. Do we look like the kind of store that sells "I Just Called to Say I Love You"? Go to the mall.
What's your problem?
Do you even know your daughter? There's no way she likes that song. Is she in a coma?
Oh, okay, buddy. I didn't know it was Pick on the Middle-Aged Square Guy Day. My apologies. I'll be on my way.
Bye-bye.
A scene from the film High Fidelity. My guest is Jack Black. So did you ever have a run-in with a clerk like this in a record store?
I'm constantly embarrassed by my, especially now after making that movie, with the things that I buy, I feel extra self-conscious because they're like, oh, here comes the famous record clerk from that movie. So, Yeah, I don't even know if I want to say the things that I'm embarrassed of buying now.
Oh, tell us, yes.
I don't know that I'm ready to give you my...
Keep it coming.
My secret deep nuggets. Oh, no.
Oh, come on, how bad can it be?
Well, you know, it's no secret that I love the early Bobby McFerrin. I don't know that that's embarrassing. I mean, it's just because of Don't Worry, Be Happy that it's embarrassing.
An you know, icon that's when... of rock has fallen.
No! No!
Save me!
He was a big influence on me, man. What can I say? And I think, yeah, I bought some Bobby McFerrin in record stores and felt kind of ashamed.
Now, it's hard to talk about a lot of your acting, including what you do in High Fidelity on the radio, because it's so visual, and you use your body so emphatically. Was that something you've developed over a long period of time?
I just always feel like I have to go all the way. If I don't go all the way, I feel like I've blown it, and that translates into really high energy, kind of crazy physical performances.
Well, you play a lot of these guys who are so comfortable in their body and are so emphatic, so at ease, and so at ease with taking their clothes off, even if they're schlubby or, yeah, you know, not perfect physique.
Right.
Now,
what are you talking about? What are you saying?
So,
that, yeah,
are you comfortable in your body that way when you're walking around? And if not, how does it change when a camera goes on?
Right. No, I'm not that comfortable. I'm all right with my body. I think it's kind of weird looking. But I know that when I get a little bit embarrassed, I know that I'm on to something entertaining. So my need for pleasing the crowd overtakes my fear of being exposed. You know what I mean? It's a stronger urge. So, yeah, I feel like, wait a second, if I do walk out there in my tidy whities, oh, they're going to love that. I will look like a total fool and an idiot, but, oh, I can't, yeah. I can't resist.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't stop yourself.
But it also, you know, when I'm out there, you know, dancing around and looking so free and comfortable with my body, I feel like it's also kind of masking this other thing that I'm hiding, where, you know, I don't want to show my real, like, inner demons or something, or I'm afraid the people, I'm hiding this thing that my main fear is that people are going to be bored of me, you know, the real me, I end up, like, shooting off all my brain fireworks to mask that, I think.
This goes back to when you were saying, we were talking about the roles that you play, and that you said that, you know, some actors look for roles that stretch them, and you like to explore sides of you that you know well already.
Yeah.
Why? Why do you prefer
I want
those?
To get to the center of me. because, like I said, I am a crowd pleaser by nature. And I just want to go with my bread and butter. When it gets down to business, it's like, you know what? Do you want to see Einstein, his sketches? No! You want him to break codes. Do you want to see Picasso dance? I don't. I want him to paint me an awesome painting. Do you want to see me in a period piece about an English guy that cries a lot?
Yes, yes. I'd go to that.
It's just not my bread and butter. And, yeah, maybe, you know, once I finally get to the center of me, then I'll go out and venture forth. That's the plan.
I want to talk about Tenacious D. How did you and Kyle Gass start the band? Were you just jamming together?
Yeah, you know, We were both in this theater company, the Actors Gang.
The Tim Robbins troupe.
Yeah, Tim Robbins troupe. And he was kind of the designated musical guy in the company, and I came into the company later, and I wanted to be the musical guy. So there was kind of a rivalry right from the get-go. There was some animosity between the two of us for, you know, he wanted to keep his turf, and I definitely wanted in on some of that action. But then eventually we joined forces and became best friends and would go over to his little apartment on Cochrane Avenue in Hollywood. We called it the Cockroach. And we would just spend hours jamming in with the tape recorder recording everything. And we would do that, and then we would have what we called stony playback, where we would listen back and see if there were any nuggets in there. But, yeah, we had a lot of good times just jamming just for kicks. And then eventually, after years of that, we wrote our first song that we performed in front of an audience. We wrote Tribute, which we wanted to write the greatest song in the world.
And you did.
We did not. Well, we wrote it, but we couldn't remember it. We weren't taping. That was the one time we weren't taping. So then we were like, we have to write a tribute to the song that's lost. And that's what we did.
This is the greatest and best song in the world. Tribute. Long time ago, me and my brother Kyle here, we was hitchhiking down a long and a lonesome road. All of a sudden, there shined a shiny demon in the middle of the road. And he said, play the best song in the world, or I'll eat your soul. Well, me and Kyle, we looked at each other, and we each said, okay. And we played the first thing that came to our heads, just so happened to be the best song in the world. It was the best song in the world. Look into my eyes and it's easy to see, one and one make two, two and one make three. Destiny. Once every 100,000 years or so, when the sun doth shine and the moon doth glow and the grass doth grow.
You've written a screenplay featuring Tenacious D. What's the story? What status is that?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, we've done it. We've cracked the code, and the Tenacious D screenplay is finished. And I'm very proud of it, but you know, we're trying to get a deal with New Line Pictures, and if we get that deal done, then we'll turn it into them and see if they have a lot of notes.
And what happens with Tenacious D in the film?
Well, it starts. I'm going to tell you what I can. We start before there was a Tenacious D.
In the Dark Ages. Yeah.
Yes. It's you're going to see me as a 10-year-old. And we haven't asked him yet, but hopefully we'll get Meatloaf to play my father. And
oh, that's great. You remind me so much of Meatloaf.
Yeah, we share a lot of things. I've definitely bitten off some of his moves. Huh. But anyway, I run away from home because he doesn't understand the heavy metal that I need to, you know. And I find Kyle in Los Angeles, and he becomes my guru and my teacher. And we form Tenacious D, and then we go on our first epic quest. And that's the movie. That's all I'm comfortable telling you.
Well, it sounds like the Ring cycle.
Yeah. You find out the real reason why we are named Tenacious D. You find out all the things that you need in an origin type of, you know, movie. We're giving the true story behind a legendary band.
Well, I really enjoyed meeting you and talking with you today on Fresh Air. Thank you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Jack Black stars in the new movie, School of Rock.